Chapter 2, entitled Maharaj Nimi Meets the Nine Yogendras. Text 38. Avidyamano apyavabhati hi dvayo Dhatur dhiya svapna mano ratho yatha Tatkarma sankalpa vikalpa kam mano Budho niruthyad abhayam tatasyad Avidyamano api avabhati hi tvayo Dhatur dhiya svapna mano ratho yatha Tatkarma sankalpa vikalpa kam mano Budho niruthyat abhayam tatasya Avidyamano api avabhati hi tvayo Dhatur dhiya svapna mano ratho yatha Tatkarma sankalpa vikalpa kam mano Budho niruthyat abhayam tatasya Matajis. Word to word, avidyamana, not present in reality, api, although, avabhati, is manifest, he, indeed, dvaya, duality, dhyatu, of person experiencing, Dhiya, by the intelligence. Swapna, a dream. Manoratho, or conceiving of a desire. Yatha, as. Tat, therefore. Karma, of material activities. Sankalpa vikalpakam, having function of forming positive and negative desires. Mana, the mind. The Buddha, an intelligent person. Nirundhayat, should bring under control. Abhayam, fearlessness. Tata, in this way. Syat, there may be. Translation purport by the servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Although the duality in the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul experiences it as a real under the influence of his own conditioned intelligence. This imaginary experience of a world separate from Krishna can be compared to the acts of dreaming and desiring. When the conditioned soul dreams at night of something desirable or horrible, or when he daydreams of what he would like to have or avoid, he creates a reality that has no existence beyond his own imagination. The tendency of the mind is to accept and reject various activities based on sense gratification. Therefore, an intelligent person should control the mind, restricting it from the illusion of seeing things separate from Krishna. And when the mind is thus controlled, he will experience actual fearlessness. So reading from the purport which is left from yesterday. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has used the word Manasa Pratyaksha to describe the experience of the material life. Manasa Pratyaksha means that which is experienced only within the mind. The actual Pratyaksha is described in Bhagavad Gita 9.2. Rajavidya Rajaguhyam Pavitram Idamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukhum Kartumavyam. When one submissively hears the instructions given by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita, which constitute the king of all knowledge, Rajavidya, and the most confidential of all information, Rajaguhyam, by associating with such a spotless spiritual knowledge, Pavitram Idam Uttamam, one can directly experience one's eternal nature, Pratyaksha Avagamam. By experiencing one's eternal nature, one becomes thoroughly religious, Dharmyam, blissful, susukham, and eternally engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, kartum avyayam. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted the following Shruti mantra in the connection. Vijita rishika vayubhir adanta manas turagam. By the very senses and life air, one has conquered the uncurbed mind, will again drag one away. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the meaning of this verse, Samavahaya Gurosh Charanam, if one rejects the lotus feet of one's spiritual master, all of one's previous spiritual advancement becomes null and void. This has already been indicated in the previous verse by the word Guru Devatma Atma. Unless one accepts a bona fide spiritual master in an authorized parampara as one's worshipable deity and life and soul, there is no question of overcoming the duality of material life. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made the following comment on this verse. Control of the mind is a result of living a life of devotional service to the Lord. By the influence of the fixed devotional service, the accepting and rejecting mind can stop its thirst for sensory enjoyment apart from Krishna. In transcendental Krishna consciousness, there is no contradiction, pettiness or lack of ecstasy. In other words, it is not like a material object which always proves temporary and constantly miserable. Having forgotten Krishna, the conditioned living entity is suffering the misdirection and perversion of his own so-called intelligence. The living entities are fragmental parts of the supreme shelter, Krishna, but have fallen from Krishna's. The living entity are fragmental parts of the supreme shelter, Krishna, but have fallen from Krishna's kingdom of spiritual pastimes. Because of forgetting the supreme Lord, they become prone to sinful life and turn their attention to dangerous material objects, which fill them with constant fear. If one desire to subdue the mind, which is constantly engaged in the duality of mental concoction, one must take to the devotional service of Lord Shri Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatishva Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Nunathamvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamcha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Mrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Taru Brasha Krupa Sindhu Pya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So, we were starting, begging for the mercy and empowerment from my all Shikshakurus and all Vaishnavas assembled here for attempting to discuss some Krishna Katha. So, we'll focus our discussions for today's verse upon the, as the verse says, the mind and its imagined pleasures, how to deal with it, and what are the alternative ways of the pleasures, or what is or rather than alternative, what is the ultimate way of pleasure and how it can be directly perceived and its attributes. When the pleasure, so there was one time when I was in a hospital, and I was looking at one patient who was arrived in the hospital. He was with a very precarious situation. So when he was in a bed, he was not conscious of things, what is happening around him. And he was just murmuring some words. Without any context, he was just saying few things, you know. And actually what he was saying is very bad words. He was giving bad words to everyone around him. And he could not understand what's going on around him, who is standing next to him. But he was just giving some bad words, what he was used to, right. So much so that even the family was so much embarrassed, you know, to come closer to that bed. So family was also staying outside of the ward. So no was a family member or relative was coming to meet him, right? And then inquired about what that patient was suffering through. So understood that he was suffering through a liver cirrhosis. And that liver cirrhosis was actually damaging his liver and is affecting his brain. And that's why he was so unconscious in dealing with the people around him. And he was giving so many bad words, you know. So somebody takes to this drinking of alcohol because he imagined there is a pleasure. But actually, it is so much suffering he himself is undergoing, and so much embarrassment the family members are also facing through it. Right? So that is the material pleasures are. It actually binds us like a drunkard. He is in such a grip of such a strong illusion, so tight that he can't go away. He's so tightly bound. And moreover, the very thing that makes his life messy, he wants it again and again. He thinks that he can't live without it. That's a drunkard. That's a phenomena of the material pleasures are. So, not only that it binds us, but actually it blinds us. Like one time, when I was working with a software company, one of my colleagues, when we are going outside, to have a after lunch, to avoid the nap, we used to go outside after lunch. So when I was going around our campus, the company's campus, there are so many people actually smoking. In the hot sunny day, they were smoking cigarettes. So my friend said, he said to me, what a foolishness these people, On such a sunny day, they are smoking. What do they get out of this, They're inhaling such a smoke inside, with a fire outside and inhaling some smoke inside. What are you going to get out of that? I said, really? Yes. And he said that the Maha tradition doesn't allow this. He was from such a tradition, some Indian family, Indian traditions. He said, Maha tradition doesn't allow this, I said, really? Really? And I was feeling very happy because he was coming to the, one of our regulatory principles that no for this. So I said, yes, actually. I also don't understand why do they get out, what they get out of the cigarette smoking and drinking, drinking alcohols. What do they get out of it? Doesn't make any sense. And when I said drinking doesn't make any sense, there was like an awkward silence there. And I was wondering what happened. So his nature, he could not stop for long and he immediately retaliated. No, drinking is okay. Drinking is all right. Cigarette smoking doesn't make sense. I said, how come? Right? So actually it makes us blind. We see the faults of others, but we can't understand that I am also going through that fault. Right? That's what the material pleasures are. That binds us and at the same time blinds us. So Radha Gopinath Prabhu gives one example in his Journey of Self-Discovery course. He says that there was one person, he saw that one patient was admitted on a bed and he was suffering with his liver was quite damaged because of drinking. So a doctor comes to him and says that, now you will have to go through, if you have to get cure, you may die in these situations. He said, no, please save me. Doctor, please save me. Do anything, but please save me. He says, okay, all right, we'll see to it how you recover. And then they go through a lot of, treatment and then cure, somewhat cures. They give so many pills day and night and such a strict diet he has to follow because the liver has to recover. So they follow such a strict diet and so much torture he has to go through to recover. And once he recovers, he's at the time of discharge. Doctor says him that, promise that you won't drink again. He says, yes, I will not do it again. Because I will go through these tortures, I will not do it again. But a week later, again he gets admitted. For what? Again he drinks. Right? So this is what the mind goes on. Right? From acceptance and rejections. He accepted that I will not do this, but again he rejects. And the verse says, Sankalpa Vikalpakam. Tat Karma Sankalpa Vikalpakam Mano. So it accepts and rejects. Sankalpa and Vikalpa. Based upon sense gratifications, based upon his desire to enjoy, and the mind swims, he enjoys. So sankalpa and vikalpa is like, if you throw something in the sea, it goes inside, but after a while, it again comes back to the shore. That's a sankalpa and vikalpa. You make some decisions, but again, you withdraw it. And the base situations, this is seen in the student's life. As the exams are coming closer, in his preparatory leaves, PL, he prepares so much. He utilizes all that preparation leaves and his studies because he has not studied regularly in his college times. He didn't study. That's why the PL and the exam time, the one day before the exam, he makes a night out. And that's quite common in the hostels to do the night outs. So he's preparing so much and then he appears for the exams and then he says, no. The next semester, I will do regular study so that I will not be burdensome by the night outs and the burden in the PL. He makes that sankalpa that I will do regular studies. But as the next year starts, the next semester starts, he forgets that. And he says, cricket is not so bad. Playing, socializing is not so bad. I have to do it. When is the time to do it then? If not this, right? So sankalpa and vikalpa, the mind actually flickers through it. fashion, something Something is according to the fresh intent. You buy it, keep it, use it according to the fresh intent. And after a few weeks, it just lies around your corner. Right? And as Shishasha Guru says, he quotes that, fashion is a form of ugliness. It's so intolerable that we have to alter it every 6 months. Right? That's the sankalpa and vikalpa of mind, pendulum. Like from one position, it releases, it goes to the other positions, stays for some time, and being released, again goes to the other. It's never a balanced. And this happens because of the mind's pleasure. Mind imagines so much pleasure. It actually, there's not much pleasure, but it exaggerates so much. It exaggerates to so much point that even if a drop of water in a desert, he considers it as an ocean. That's how the exaggeration goes to the that intensity and that exaggeration. Now, there may be some pleasures. We are not denying that there not be any pleasures. There may be some pleasures. But imagine so high, so much high, that balloon, once burst, it turns into the, rather than a happiness, it turns into the miseries. And we succumb to such kind of pleasures. We succumb. Because actually, the soul is searching for the pleasure. The soul is having a pleasure seeking. Right? Imagine a driving in a car. If a neighboring person is too much chatting with you, is constantly speaking something, non-stop talks, like a kid or a housewife sitting next to a driver, right? Continuously speaks something and bothers him or distracts him while driving. Not to land up into an accident or not to miss his destination, what he has to do? A simple thing. He doesn't have to bother himself, right? He doesn't have to bother himself with that chatter box, right? How do he do that? He just have to neglect himself. But how do he neglect? You know? So, neglect is not so easy. So, only way is possible is when he hears something else or he tuned to something else, right? Then he will not be bothered about that chatter box. And that's why they say, the advertise the car is, this car is for your family. With the whole family you can travel in this car. And that comes with a music system. So that you can tune to something and not bother about the chatterbox. So, the mind is like that somebody who is sitting next to you who is bothering, a companion, but is bothering a chatterbox. And a driver is we sitting on a driver's seat. Now we fear that if I neglect my companion, I neglect that mind, what will happen? It may throw me out of my driver's seat. There is a fear. But understand, mind can't throw us out. It doesn't have any power to throw us out. You know? Rather, if you gradually neglect him, if you focus on your goals, then mind will actually slow down. Right? And that's only possible, as the verse suggests, the purport suggests that it is possible when you absorb ourselves, when we absorb ourselves in Krishna. That's the only way. Right? So solution is very clear. Krishna, if you take it as an ultimate goal, then it is possible. Like in 11th chapter, the last verse of universal form concludes with a Mat karma krit mat paramo mat bhakta sangha varjita. So he says, Krishna says, he advises very clearly there, mat karma krit, that you do my work, mat paramo, you make me as your ultimate goal, mat paramo, right? If you make Krishna as an ultimate goal, then the life and the mind can be peaceful, right? But does that mean we don't have small goals in our life? Yes, agree that the Krishna is our ultimate goal, but we do have very many small goals in our life. What to do? How to deal with that? Right? We can't neglect it. Right? Of course we can't neglect it. We have to deal with those small goals, but keeping our eyes on the ultimate goal. Right? But life is not such a, in a perfect situation that my small goals will not contradict my ultimate goal. Many a times, it is a situation that my small goals in the life contradicts or conflicts with my ultimate goal. mat parmo, as Lord Krishna says. So what do we do in that case? That's a case when we need to take a wise decision or a courageous decision, where we need to put few things in a background and few things in a forefront, where we need to do some sacrifice. Some sacrifice element is required. Like example is Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj was performing the 100 sacrifice, right? It was a big accomplishment for him, for any king to do the 100 sacrifice is a big accomplishment. So it was one of his goal as a king, right? And to protect the citizens, he was carrying out the sacrifices. But he stopped it as Supreme Personality of Godhead, he himself came and intervened into the situations that this will have a, because of the Indra's request, he stopped it. So to please Krishna, that is the ultimate goal of life, he sacrificed his small goals. Because the ultimate goal is to please Krishna. So Prithu Maharaj sacrificed his personal goals, right, that small goals, and kept eyes on pleasing Krishna. So sacrifice is very essential in our life. But that sacrifice has to deal with the maturity, right? It's not that once we sacrifice and we lament later, oh, why did I do that? Why did I sacrifice that, right? When does that happen? When you expect some applaud or some praise for that sacrifice, then you lament on it. So that sacrifice is not in a proper mood. The sacrifice has to be done with a proper maturity, without any expectations in a return. So coming to the point that the Krishna is our ultimate goal, Krishna is not like an optional filler, but he is the prime and essential need of our life. He is our life and soul, right? Like, if somebody is traveling on a vacation, some trip, let's say to the Himalayas, right? What he will gather in his suitcase is a long journey. So what he will keep in his suitcase, in his briefcase? If he packs about big camera, lenses, and so many lenses, and so many these things, and doesn't have any space left for the warm clothing, will that be an intelligent decision? Surely not. Isn't it? Because doing that, he will only suffer there. The lens and the camera is of not so much importance as the warm clothing there. Right? So our time is like that. How we occupy our time? We may have a long to-do list. What we pick up from our to-do list, right? That's more important, right? If we pick up some petty small things, which is of very less important, right? And the ultimate aim, the Krishna, we put it as just an optional filler, the life will be troublesome. Like sometimes, let me do what is the urgent and important. Chanting to hota rahega. That's like, keeping the warm clothing outside and keeping all the camera and lenses and all those, not necessary of life, keeping into the, adding into the bag, and no room left for the warm clothing. So we can't say that, that attitude that I will do it whenever I get time, that we can't do it for our sadhana. Because Krishna is our ultimate aim, right? Ultimate goal. So we need to take care of that. Now, these the mind's pleasures. Contrasting it with so mind's pleasures are like a very much imaginary pleasures. They are very much unfit to satisfy our soul. For example, let's say when we are taking a gulab jamun, we hear that a certain shop in some like 5-10 kilometers from here, it sells the best quality of gulab jamun. You heard it from somewhere. Right, so material pleasures. You are dragged there. As you are dragged there, you make a lot of endeavor to go there. But what happens? As you go there, you see the shop is closed, or even if the shop is open, gulab jamun is out of stock. That's what the material pleasures are most of the times. Right? When the rumor is created so much, the hype is created so much that you want to go, you want to put endeavor. But at the last, you don't achieve it. That's a material pleasures most of the times. Let's say, even if it is there, even if that gulab jamun is there, right? You have it, you purchase it, you put it on your, like you test it. But then you find it, it was not to what you have imagined, what you have thought. It was nowhere to that calibrate, you know, that standard, what you had imagined, right? So there's only hype. Reality is not worth, right? So reality of that pleasure is very substandard, right? So that gulab jamun is not much tasty. Let's say you test it and it was really good. Let's see, consider that probability of that case also. That the shop is open, it is not out of stock, and you have it, you test it, and it's really good. But then what next? When you test it, you put it on the tongue, right? You really find it very delicious. But how long? How long that taste remains on your tongue? So you decide, okay, I will chew it very slow. You chew it very slow, but even then, right, it is lost after a while, right? Let's say you think that, I will buy more of those gulab jamuns, but that costs to your pocket. All right, you still buy it, you buy, but how many of those gulab jamuns can satisfy you? Some point you achieve some threshold. No, it's not tasting the first one. The 10th one doesn't taste like the first one which I had, right? Although it is the same quality, right? From the same shop, right? So we understand there is a threshold. If not, then it is a bodily capacity. We have some bodily capacity of which, not more than that we can eat, right? So our enjoyment is actually is temporary, right? And how long it lasts? For a quite while, right? So if you go from there, like, you know, you enjoyed, you tested it, that's done, right? And you go to your friend and say that, you know, I tested that gulab jamun, that was very delicious. How was it? Yeah, it was very delicious. Where is it now? He said, yeah, enjoyed it, that's all, right? Are you feeling it till that taste? No, it's gone, temporary. To show, to convince him that I ate it, you take a selfie and you take a pic that I really enjoyed it. I went on those mountains, I was there. Actually, that enjoyment was for some time. But to make an imagine, so that that pleasure is just in a memory or imagination or in the mind. And for that, you need to take some pics or some selfies, right? To convince others that I enjoyed it, right? That's the material pleasures, imaginary pleasures of this world. So the verse actually speaks about, like Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, is a manaso pratyaksha. That means it is experience, these material pleasures are just experienced in the mind and nowhere else. In contrast to it, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur quotes a verse from the Bhagavad Gita 9.2. Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, Pavitram Idam Uttamam, Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam, Susukum Kartum Avvayam. So Raja Vidya, he says, this knowledge of Bhakti Yoga is going to award us Susukam, right? Susukam is the greatest happiness, right? Is performed happily, and is not just pleasures of like material world, right? In contrast to the material world. So Raja Vidya, he says, king of knowledge. Now why is it called as king of knowledge? Because Vidya is still in the mode of goodness. When you call it a Vidya, knowledge about soul, is still in the mode of goodness, is still under the kingdom of Maya. But when he calls it a Raja Vidya, that means it's talking about the knowledge about super soul and the soul's relation with the super soul. That's why it is called as Raja Vidya, which is not in the kingdom of Maya. It is not in any modes, but it is above it. That's why it is called as Raja Vidya. So Bhakti is the king of all processes, king of all knowledge, and that's why it is called as Raja Vidya. Like a king, he holds the highest authority amongst all the people, right? So is the Bhakti. Among all the processes, it holds the highest authority. Balde Vidya Bhushan Pad, he says, Raja Vidya means the knowledge of wealthy people. Now that may get a surprise to us. Knowledge of wealthy peoples. Wealthy people means who are generous at their heart. They are mercifully working for others' benefit. They are generous people, right? So actually, this knowledge makes us a king, right? So this knowledge is not for those who have miserly attitude towards life. That's why it means Raja Vidya, right? So those who have the royal heart of giving it to the others, benefiting to the others. That's why this is called as royal, those who possess a royal heart, Raja Vidya. Srila Prabhupada was one of such a generous heart, you know, who had that royal heart to give it to the others. Otherwise, he could have been very happy in his own devotional service, happy in a Vrindavan in a Kutir. But he went out to distribute this knowledge. Right? He was so generous to give it to the most unexpected audience in the West, you know, in the Bowery side, you know, those who are high with the drugs. Right? So, so this knowledge is actually makes us a king. That's why it's called as Raja Vidya. Now, king is what? King is, actually, one of the definitions of king is who is not subservient to the others. King says, I am not subservient to the others and I have permission of my queen to say so. That's not a king. A king is actually not subservient to anyone, right? And actually history reveals, you know, a king when he comes down to some attraction of the opposite sex, he's wiped out. Peshwa and even in the Ramayana, Ravana, he's wiped out, right, from the history pages. So those powerful people who can, you know, challenge any powerful hand, but they become puppet into some soft hands, right? But king is supposed to be very powerful, not succumb to the any of those material forces. And that's why this knowledge can make somebody a king. That means he is not subservient to anyone, any material force, not even to the body, not even to the senses, not even to his own mind. That's why it can make us a king, Raja Vidya. Now that doesn't mean that we don't have to neglect the Apara Vidya. No, we don't have to neglect the Apara Vidya, right? But we don't have to reject Apara Vidya, but we should know that Apara Vidya should not come into the Para Vidya, right? The ultimate goal is Krishna. Now it is also said that the Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam. Raja Guhyam is the highest of, highest secret. So the king doesn't store his treasure somewhere outside of his kingdom, outside of his palace. He stores quite within, inside the palace, right? At the core of the palace, he stores his treasure. And so, Lord Krishna has stored this wisdom of Raja Vidya inside Bhagavad Gita, right? It says in the 9th chapter, right? In the middle of the Bhagavad Gita, he stores this treasure. Right. So Shripad Ramanujacharya, he gives an explanation that Raja Vidya is a knowledge known to the kings and Raja Guhyam is a secret only known to the kings. Now how is that? What about the ordinary peoples? Right? If that knowledge is just meant for the kings and that secret is only known to the kings, then what about the ordinary people? So king here doesn't mean that one who rules some territory. Right? King actually means one who rules a service domain. Now, service domain has a lot more different context in the day-to-day world. But service domain, actually what I mean by the service domain is, a king, a person who has a privilege to perform a service. A person who is given a privilege to perform some service or bhakti, right? That can be termed as a king. Like Radhanath Maharaj, he says always, service is a privilege, right? I'm not wrong if I say that, you know, service is a prerogative of a devotee or a bhakta, right? And that's what makes him a king of the service domain, right? That's why he is a king and that secret is known to him. Now, why it is called as a secret? You know, secret is because till the time someone tests it, it remains a secret. Like many times, we come across some food items or edible items and someone asks you, how is it? Says, I can't put it into any words how tastier it is, right? I can't put it in any words. How it is sweeter, how it is like bitter, or how it is. I can't put it in any words. It's so delicious, right? So, it remains a secret unless the other person tests it for himself. That's why it's Raja Guhyam, right? Unless somebody tests the devotional service, he will not understand it, how glorious it is. So, ordinary secrets of our life can give us some happiness, some wealth, some power, right? But these are all limited. But this Raja Guhyam is going to give us the internal and infinite happiness, right? It's also pavitram. So generally happiness, enjoyment is not correlated with more with the, you know, purifying our heart, right? But that's a material side of happiness. But this happiness, as the Rajvidya is describing it, it uproots the sinful reactions of the thousands of lifetimes, right? The root cause of sin is ego, I am the doer, doership and the controllership, right? It actually, this knowledge, the bhakti yoga, actually eliminate this ego, false ego, right? And then our action actually aligns with the Krishna's will. Not only that, but it also burns up the storehouse of the whole sin. That all is burnt out. That's why it's a pavitram. So kevala bhakti, the pure devotional service, is like a Ganges, powerful force of Ganges, right? When it comes, it sweeps through everything which comes across it. Any obstacles, it sweeps through and finds its way. That's what the kevala bhakti is. It doesn't need anything additional. It itself is so powerful that it can purify our heart like a Ganges. It's also said it is a uttamam. Uttamam means the highest. There is no match in this material world for it. It's the highest. Uttamam means tama is a ignorance. Tama is a darkness. Something which is above darkness, that is called as uttama. This is a transcendental. So this bhakti is a transcendental. Now the next it says is a, the verse says is a pratyaksha avagamam. Now pratyaksha avagamam means what? It's a direct perception. It gives a direct perception of the Supreme Lord. So bhakta, a person who is performing, applying this Rajavidya, this bhakti yoga, he can only have the vision of the Lord, direct perception of the Lord. Right? So Arjuna may think that, you know, I am having the direct vision of the Lord because I am practicing bhakti. But Krishna denies that. He says, no. You know, there are many others who are seeing me, right? But they are not going to go to the spiritual world, right? Only one who is a practitioner of bhakti, right? He is awarded to go to the spiritual world, right? Not just by hearing Bhagavad Gita, but applying that, practicing Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, you are going to go to the spiritual world, or anyone else is going to go to the spiritual world. So actually, it awards the direct vision of the Supreme Lord, right? Direct perception of the Lord, right? Direct perception also means there is no doubt in this knowledge. Directly you can perceive it, right? So, so somebody is little hungry, what he is going to say? That I think I am hungry, right? But somebody who has not eaten for 1 or 2 days, he will not say that I think I am hungry. He says, I am hungry. There is no doubt, there is no thinking in it, right? So there is no doubt. This is a direct and immediate perception, right? That clarifies all the doubts. This is a direct perception. That's a bhakti yoga. You know. Pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means pratyaksha, directly with the eyes. With these senses you can feel it. You know. One doesn't need to wait till the death arrives to have the realization of the Supreme Lord. You can directly feel, with these senses you can directly feel it. You know. So, some degree of realizations, right from our initial days of practice, we get it, right? Direct perception. Like, you know, sometimes a preacher or a teacher of Krishna consciousness, he get to surprise when his a new student starts speaking something, or gives such a wonderful realizations, right? And the preacher is still hooked upon giving him indirect things. But he himself sometimes brings about such a wonderful realizations, right? So he surprises. Why? Because even the initial level of practice gives him such a wonderful realizations in bhakti and direct perception. Pratyaksha avagamam. Avagamam means understood, right? So, Prabhupada says that, you know, if somebody is fed, you know, some nutritious, palatable food, right? It doesn't need anybody's advice to say that after eating this, I am feeling strong. I am feeling very energetic. He doesn't need anybody's advice. So is the pratyaksha avagamam. Practicing Krishna consciousness, right? It will automatically will satisfy us. And the few verses down the line, 2-3 verses down the lines, the famous verse is going to come. Tushti, pushti, Shuddha Anughasam, Shuddha Paya Anughasam, right? So that verse is going to come. So there is a direct experience, right? So one can even understand, you know, how does that direct experience we get, you know? When our sadhana is not going well, then we get, we understand we are influenced by the modes when our sadhana is not going well. That's one of the direct perception, that if my sadhana goes well, if I take the medicines well, I'm getting a newer and newer realizations in the Krishna consciousness, right? So Kleshagni and Shubhada, right? These are the two initial characteristics can happen in even sadhana bhakti. At the initial stages also, it can manifest Kleshagni and Shubhada. To manifest it to the full-fledged Kleshagni, right? Kleshagni, relief from all sufferings, and Shubhada, all auspiciousness. To the full-fledged, it will manifest at the Nishtha stage. But even at the initial stages, we can get a good glimpse of it. Right? Again, it says, the verse says that it is a dharmam. So dharmam is, it is the highest religion somebody can perform. Right? It automatically attains all the perfection of all the duties, what you have to do in a varna and ashram, that can be attained through the bhakti yoga. That is called as dharmam. This also means, dharmam also means that obeying all the laws. Right? Let's say, if somebody is having one business in one country, and he wants to expand his business into the other country, what he needs to do, right? But when he lands up in the other country, that business is termed as illegal by that law, right? So is many processes. Something used in the one process may not be allowed into other process, but the bhakti is not bound to the any laws. Bhakti comes into the universal laws, right? It holds true at any point of time, any space, it holds true. That's the dharma. This is the highest religion, religious practice, right? So it is also called as is avyam. Avyam means it's everlasting. In contrast to the material prejas, which is very temporary, it's everlasting. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, says that it is beyond all the muda, all the gunas, or all the modes. And that's why it is eternal. And that's why it is everlasting. So Jiva Goswami Pad, into the context of the verse of Bhakti Paresha Anubhava Viraktir, in that verse, he quotes that the bhakti is considered as of eating food, right? Which satisfies you, which nourishes you, which detaches you from a hunger, right? So Tushti Pushti Shuddha Anugasam, right? So it makes you, all three things happen simultaneously, satisfies, nourishes and detaches you from the hunger, right? But eating itself, you know, you'll become disinterested into the eating more, right? That's the nature. If you're eating more and more, then you become disinterested. But the bhakti is not like that. Jiva Goswami Pad says, bhakti is not like that. Hearing more about the Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's beauty, we become more and more interested. We become more and more interested. Although we may be hearing the same pastimes again and again, maybe the same pastimes may be depicted in a Chandan Yatra, but we still, every day, take so much pleasure, right, to see that. The same pastimes maybe would have been repeated in the Chandan Yatra festival, but we take more and more pleasures, right, to see those pastimes. And that's why it is... It actually gives you attraction and attachment to Krishna. It grows more and more by hearing more and more. By taking this more and more, it increases more and more. And that's why bhakti is not a material phenomena. Jiva Goswami Pad concludes that bhakti is not a material phenomena. And that's why it's everlasting. So, it is imperishable in the sense it is it's of its meritorious results. It's imperishable. It is eternal, right? The verse Neha Bikramanasho says that. It is also susukham, that it is a joyfully performed. Right? Krishna is a source of joy. Right? And Krishna is called as Rasaraj Krishna. And Prabhupada, in his book to the title, he writes, Rasaraj Krishna, the pleasure, the reservoir of all pleasure. Rasaraj Krishna. So, coming from him, the bhakti yoga, reciprocation with the Krishna, is always very joyful, everlasting, susukham. So, this is performed very happily. The bhakti yoga is performed very happily. Reason for it is? Because it's very easy. Easy? Because Prabhupada quotes in the purport that it is very easy. Why? Because it's based on, it doesn't penalizes our, you know, penalizes our senses. We don't have to go to the tortures of like what a jnana and a sankhya yoga or karma yoga. You don't have to torture your senses so much, right? It is just based upon hearing. Ears. Ears are working at all times. However, the ear wax you put, but you still get disturbed because the ears are very active. You always hear, right? So, even animals can't practice this pranayama or ashtanga yoga, right? But they can hear. But the example of Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj in the deer body, when he went to the Palashrashrams, so he could hear from the sages and he could get the body of Jad Bharat. So he got benefited, right? So it's very easy. Anyone can perform it. That's why it's very happily performed. Another thing is, senses are engaged. You know, all your intelligence, all your senses are engaged. So that's why it is very happy process. And it can be performed in any situation of life. It's not that somebody has to be very rich. Even a poverty stricken condition, or in any ashrams, you can perform it. No caste or no creed or no gender is required, right? Krishna makes it so merciful. He makes it so simple that he's still satisfied. He is satisfied even with the leaf, you know. So he can perform at any conditions of the life. So, if you consider like how can we just be satisfied by the leaflet? If somebody, we are sitting for the prasad and somebody just give you a leaflet, will we be satisfied? No. We are expecting a South Indian menu if the leaflet is being kept in front of us, right? But the Krishna is even satisfied with the leaflet. That's why he so made it so merciful. This process has made it so simple. And that's why he's so happy. He's just chanting and dancing. So, process is happy, right? But probably we don't experience it because our tongue may be diseased, right? Sugarcane juice is sweet, but because we have a diseased tongue, that's why we are not able to taste it properly, right? So in the company, if somebody goes for an interview, will that interview say him that, you know, this company is a boring? Will that company will advertise that his product is not good? Will any company will advertise it? On top of it, when the highest certification, ISO, is awarded, that this company is very good, right? It will never happen that the highest reward is given, that this, you know, highest authority has given that reward, that this is very good company or this product is very good, right? Krishna has termed this process as a susukham, right? That means it is very happily performed, right? That means the problem must be with us to rectify, right? It is in our capacity to reinstate that taste, right? We can't blame that situation, we can't toss it, that this situation is not suitable or this is not suitable, right? It can be performed in any situations, even in any ashrams, happily. Nothing additional is required to make this process happy, you know. Sometimes if we want to take some pleasures, we may do a Google search that how can I add more things, more pleasures to this. No, nothing additional things you required to make this process happy because it itself is happy, right? We may can utilize something in this process. Utility is a principle. But the process is actually which is giving you happiness. It's a susukam, right? And we need to, within the bounty of Krishna consciousness, right? We need to apply this principle of Krishna consciousness and rejoice and feel this process can be joyfully be performed. Now, how a practitioner can see a material pleasures? How does he detach it from this material pleasures? How does one do that? It's like, you know, if somebody is eating, he's very hungry. If he's eating, he doesn't bother about what is going around him, right? Same way. When somebody is practicing Krishna consciousness, he doesn't bother about what is going around in his material world, what is going around him, right? He's concentrated, he's focused on his eating. That's what the Krishna consciousness is. The person who is in Krishna consciousness, he will not bother about all the material things which are going around, all the material pleasures which are going around, right? He doesn't have to force himself to renounce his material pleasures, but it's very natural, it comes to him, right? So, So this Krishna conscious, Krishna consciousness. So one may wonder why, if it is so happily performed in contrast to the material pleasures, why somebody remains in this material world, right? So Acharya says, because they lack faith. Because they lack faith. And so the next verse Krishna says, next to the 9.2 is 9.3. Ashraddha dhanasya purusha dharmasyasya parantapa apraapya mam nivartante mrityu samsara vartamani. Ashraddha dhanasya. Because someone who doesn't have faith, he can't achieve it. Right? So the qualification is only faith. And in the purport is also quoted, in the today's verse, the purport is also quoted, that one needs to have, you know, one needs to submit to the authority. A guru padashtre is required, right? Under whom he can carry out his services. Then he can actually experience the real pleasures of Krishna consciousness, right? He can't reject the guru, right? So guru padashtre is something which is required. So, to summarize what we have been discussing, we were discussing about the material pleasures, how the mana is just like acts as a pendulum from sankalpa to the vikalpa. He never gets into the balance. And if one has to come to it, how does he has to deal with it? Ultimately, he has to make Krishna his ultimate goal. And that's what we elaborated that in the verse, Raja Vidya Rajagoyam, in that verse. The Krishna elaborated that, and purport also says that. Again, in the purport, it says that by practicing devotional service, we can achieve abhayam, and that is with the Guru Padashtra. So, for sure, I could not do much justice to this verse and the purport. There could be many elaborations could be made on this purport. So, if unknowingly or knowingly I offended anyone, please forgive me. Please forgive me for any of my immaturity. Seeking your empowerment to follow the footsteps of the advanced Vaishnavas. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki.